And you're back with Think Wing Radio, the Mike Honig Show here on CNN 650 and CNN650.com. I'm here with Dr. Jim Lester of the Houston Area Research Council. We're talking about the potential impact of the oil spill on the Houston-Galveston area. And you can participate by calling 713-9650-650 or emailing me at thinkwingradio@msn.com. So, Dr. Lester, during the break, we were talking about the kinds of impacts that oil, if and when it reaches us, could have on the food chain, the biological chain, before it degrades. Let's talk about that a little.
Okay. Most people think about the images they see on TV of the oiled birds, the investigations of the turtles and the dolphins and things like that. That's a fairly small number of animals. So far, I think they've picked up about 1,500 oiled birds. What we should be more worried about is the movement of the oil into the smaller organisms that then feed up into the larger food chain. It's not necessary for a large fish to have swum through the oil spill in order to have oil in it, because there are seven or eight steps in a marine food chain, and you start at the bottom with something very small, a little cell of algae or something that picks up a little bit of oil, and it gets eaten by something bigger, and you go up the chain. And there are some compounds that bioaccumulate. They concentrate. They magnify as you go up the chain. And we've got a problem like that in Galveston Bay from PCBs that were used in industrial processes.
Polychlorinated biphenyls. They
were
very used.
Good.
Thank you. I try to know my general stuff.
Yeah.
It was used, I believe, in transformers.
Transformers, yeah. And they're apparently laying on the bottom of parts of the bay and have moved up the food chain so that now there's a seafood advisory about spotted sea trout. Same sort of thing can happen with the oil out in the Gulf. Some of these toxic compounds move up the chain. The good thing here is that they're not synthetics, and so they'll tend to get broken down, but they can still bioaccumulate and find their way throughout the food web in the Gulf of Mexico and up into Galveston Bay.
You know, just as an aside, mercury has been a problem in seafood. It's one of those heavy metals that accumulates in tissue and just gets passed from organism to organism as you go up the food chain. And I seem to recall a year or two ago, someone, I don't know if it was, I don't know if it was a government agency or an independent group, but they said that you might not want to eat more than one or two servings of fish a week, because when they did random tests at various restaurants, everything pretty much had mercury in it.
Everything pretty much has mercury in it. The higher up you go in the food chain, the more concentrated the mercury gets. And so I'm a fan of sushi, and I still eat my tuna. But big fish like tuna, king mackerel, those are also on seafood advisories. You don't want to eat too much of them because they will contain mercury.
Boy, they're just taking all the fun out of eating, aren't they?
I still enjoy eating.
I just try not to think about it when I'm doing it. How can people be protected from, or if they can, from the environmental effects of this spill?
Well, there are only a few ways that crude oil can affect the health of a person. They can touch it so that it goes in through their skin. They can eat it, or they can breathe the fumes coming off of it. So if it does come into this area, you really probably ought to stay away from it. You don't want to pick it up and play with it.
Like the reporters are doing. What's up with that?
They're providing a really bad example.
Yes.
Because you should probably stay away from it. Just by picking it up, you're not going to get a lethal dose. But, you know, why increase your exposure to certain things that aren't good for you? There will be, if it comes to seafood safety, government regulation of the food chain coming to humans. So if it gets into the bay and it gets into the oysters, the Department of State Health Services will regulate the harvest of those oysters. If it gets into the fish and we can tell it from the sniffing test, National Marine Fisheries Service will regulate that. The thing that I think people need to consider is, what is the risk? What risk am I willing to take? And how can I minimize my risk? So You stay away from it, and you make informed decisions about what seafood you're going to buy.
Biodiversity in your food chain.
Yeah.
Basically.
It's a good idea.
I don't guess, I mean, is there any way that humans can mediate the stuff that eventually sinks to the bottom? And, you know, is there a timeline where we can look forward to minimal impact on sea life in the food chain? Or is this basically going to be like decades or longer?
Again, I don't know about the dispersed oil. I have no idea. Don't know anybody who has a clear prediction on what happens with the dispersed oil. With the surface oil, we can look back on Ixtoc. Last weekend, I was down on South Padre Island, which was hit worse than Galveston Island during the Ixtoc spill.
And that was in the Western Gulf.
Yeah, in the Western Gulf, and you don't really see the impact. There have been spills along the Gulf Coast that after about 5 years, it's very difficult to document any impact. So with the surface oil that comes to shore, I think we'll be able to see a time when it looks like the ecosystem has recovered. There are some very sensitive ecosystems down in the bottom of the Gulf, the deep water corals and things. I don't think anybody knows what will happen. If you wipe out an area of deep water coral, I have no idea how long it takes for it to come back.
You know, we haven't really talked about it before, but there has been a lot of talk about the barrier islands off Louisiana, the deterioration they've experienced over the past decades, and now the increasing deterioration that they might experience from this spill. What about our barrier islands? I mean, Galveston
is a
barrier island.
Galveston is a barrier island. Bolivar Peninsula is actually a barrier island. The area between Christmas Bay and the Gulf is actually a barrier island. And they're eroding away, except for the areas that are accumulating sand because of jetties and groynes and things like that. If we have to remove a lot of sand because the beaches get contaminated with tar balls, I would suspect that the General Land Office will put sand back.
Yeah.
We're having trouble finding enough good clean sand sources right now.
Yeah, especially if the oil gets us, the stuff we pump off the bottom will be contaminated sand.
True. So we would have to find a clean sand source, and those are, surprisingly, those are kind of hard to find. I mean, you would think there's lots of sand out there, but they're having trouble. They had trouble after the Hurricane Ike finding enough sources to replace it, but they've done a good job of replacing it.
Yeah, the operative word you're using is clean. There's plenty of sand.
Well, clean is a relative term. How clean do you want it?
How clean can you get it? There you go. So, short-term, long-term effects on coastal plants, coastal animal life, coastal barrier islands. I guess what you're saying is the worst damage is going to be short-term. Long-term, we'll notice it to a point where we probably won't see it without instrumentation. So, short-term, how bad can it get?
Oh, the image that comes to my mind right now is the satellite image after Hurricane Ike, where you had a line in the marshes where everything south of that line was dead. If the oil gets into the marshes and it's in any reasonable concentration where you can see it, it'll kill off the marsh plants. It'll kill off all the little critters in the sediment. If it falls out over an oyster reef, it'll be contaminated. You'll reduce the reproductive rates. There will be a very ugly mess that will last for a period of years.
Are you familiar with any of the possible methods of remediation that might be used near the coast?
Sure. I mean, the easiest one is if it gets onto a sandy beach, you take a bulldozer and you scrape it off. They have tried remediation in marshes. I'm not really a big fan of trying to remediate oil spills in marshes because I think you can do more harm to a saltwater marsh than good by getting equipment in there and people tramping around and trying to clean it up.
It's the devil you know and the devil you don't.
Right. So in the case of marshes, I'm a fan of natural remediation. You let the bacteria, you might try to stimulate some bacterial action by fertilizing it, and there are preparations you can put on that contain those oil-eating bacteria. But the stuff on the bottom, we hardly ever remediate it. There are probably tarballs buried a few feet deep in the sand down on Galveston Island still from Ixtoc.
We're going to be going to break in a couple of minutes. Any points you would like to make that we haven't touched on?
I want to try to put out a general message that when you're talking about the ecological impacts of things like this, it's all connected. So you can't just isolate this problem over in the eastern Gulf of Mexico. The Gulf of Mexico is an entire system, and Galveston Bay is part of that system. So I hope I'm not sounding too optimistic about how big the disaster is, because it's a disaster for the whole Gulf.
Right.
And Galveston Bay is part of that.
Yeah, we need to be a lot more pessimistic about this. Anyone who has a comment about the oil spill, if you want to talk to Jim Lester or myself, the call-in number here is 713-9650-650. You can also email me at thinkwingradio@msn.com, and that's one word, thinkwingradio@msn.com. And we're going to take a break now, so we'll be back shortly.